Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell me that it's evolution. Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Monday. A few minutes past 2 p.m. Bernie Miklas will be with us at 2:30. Lots to talk about with Bernie. We have to keep him a couple of segments. Ken says that he owns Petal Pushers STL. That is his floral shop. So everyone out there, go get your stuff from Ken. It's good to help people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ken, if you want to have a special Dave Glover arrangement, I love Stargazers and Roses.
What's a stargazer?
Shut up, Kevin. You know what a stargazer is? I'm not the gay one here.
I know what roses is. They are.
They're a form of lily. They're pink.
Oh, okay.
They're big.
Okay. Did not know that.
Yeah.
I know what roses is.
Are.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's something you say right before you pass out.
Frankenstein.
I know roses. Rach, all over the show sheet today, you got rage bait.
Yeah, it's the Oxford English Dictionary word of the year, rage bait.
That makes me so mad.
Let's look up the official definition here. So it's defined as online content deliberately designed to elicit anger or outrage by being frustrating, provocative, or offensive, typically posted in order to increase traffic or engagement with a particular web page or social media content. So sometimes, I'm going to say most of the time, if you see something online that really upsets you, if you react to that in any way, you have been rage baited. I think it's happened to pretty much everyone mm-hmm. who has used the internet. And I just think it's interesting that we're all kind of finally now settling like on what this is, what this means. And that can allow us to maybe make a little bit better choices when it comes to using the internet.
Why do we do it? Why does it? Because I do it. Like, I see something and I know this is going to really make me mad. I could go, therefore, I'm not going to read it.
Yeah.
What's attractive about it?
Sometimes it feels good to get mad.
Oh, like always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sign on for that.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's like it can be like one of the things that feels best. It's just like getting needlessly mad at something.
Sometimes it's not even needlessly. It's sometimes it's like you would love for that thing to change. And people being mad about it could lead to that thing changing.
When you read something that makes you angry, do you immediately want to share it with someone else?
Not every time, no, but I mean, it's complicated too, like doing this as a job. I think mental health 2025, hasn't been the best for Rachel. I'll just be honest. And I do know for a fact it would be better if I didn't look at online platforms as much as I do. However, this is a more difficult job than a lot to where it's like, I'm just going to check out and who cares right. what's on Twitter today? Like, right. well, you know, you got to be able to talk about what's happening. And a lot of stuff, like, especially on a show like this, where we do a lot of lifestyle stuff. It's not like I can just read the Wall Street Journal and I'm covered. Like, it's helpful to know what's going on the internet. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes I want to share it. Sometimes I'll see something and I'll be like, oh, this would be good for the show. And that's the only reason I want to talk about it. But then I'm playing into the rage bait thing and giving these people exactly what they want. So, I mean, it's hard. It's hard. But one big rage bait thing I've been seeing all weekend long just on like Instagram and TikTok has. Have you guys seen any of these angel tree videos?
No.
Okay, so if you're familiar with Angel Tree, it's through the Salvation Army, and you can go, and I believe you go to the tree, you pick an ornament off, it has a child's information and what they would like for Christmas, and then you fulfill their Christmas wishes.
It's nice.
It is a really nice thing to do. However, there's a couple of accounts.
Oh, I bet I know where this is going.
Who
can I guess?
Sure.
Is it the kids want too much stuff, and people are getting mad?
Close.
Okay.
It's the parents of the kids complaining about the gifts their children have received not being good enough. Like, basically saying, like, don't give my kid crap. If you're going to be an angel tree donator, you better spend some money on my kid. Which it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, well, why are you telling me how to be charitable? I understand why people are defensive about it. They have every right to be. I get it. I just wish we as a society were a little bit better at recognizing the rage bait, because to me, that can't be anything other than rage bait. Like, why would you go online and be like, hey, I'm someone who's not buying my kid their own Christmas presents. We're relying on the charity of others to do it. And I'm telling you, your charity isn't good enough. Like, that checks every box as far as being rage bait.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people have fallen for it. And the comment sections are just filled with people arguing back and forth. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So my thing that I put on the show sheet was like, if you want to just feel happy about life, maybe avoid that kind of content right now, because it's going to drag you to a really horrible place.
You ever done an angel tree? You ever like?
I have not. I don't think I ever have done an angel tree.
I have. Well, I guess I haven't done them, but my family has done them. Like, we used to have one at the old, at the church we would go to when I was a kid. So we would do. We would do stuff off of that. I think they always got nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
1 year, my mom, not really understanding what she was doing, gave them my Super Nintendo, which was pretty devastating.
So you didn't get it back or another one?
So I was getting a Nintendo 64. What she didn't understand was that I still wanted to play some of the old games that you could only play on the Super Nintendo because they didn't cross translate. So she gave away the Super Nintendo, you know, out with the old and with the new.
Gotcha.
It was a very, very nice thing to do. And it turns out, like, we knew the family that it was going to and all that. But I then it didn't stop me from being very upset about it.
Anyone know what an introvert is?
No.
Mm-mm.
So you know what an introvert is?
Yes.
And an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
An introvert is someone who is only comfortable in social settings with a small group of people they already know.
So they're an introvert.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like an introvert to me.
Yeah.
It also sounds like most people. I feel like even people who identify as extroverted, it's not like it's like, I can't wait to go to this party full of strangers. Like, people seek comfort and familiarity. That's silly.
I think those people, the ones who I can't wait to go be with a bunch of strangers, they have to get their kicks by charming people, right? I mean, that's what they're going to the party for.
Or they're just not intimidated or nervous by making conversation.
To what degree are you?
I like to feel some form of like validation in whatever social interaction I'm having. So, like, for instance, it's much easier for me to like meet a listener I've never met before and have a conversation with them, because I'm like, oh, they've already bought into the experience. Yeah, we have something in common. We probably both want to be in this conversation. When it comes to like a complete stranger at a party or something, I'm a lot more nervous as far as like, oh, am I just taking up your time? Am I getting on your nerves? Do you really want to be having this conversation? So that gets into my head.
Of all of my anxieties, I don't have that one.
That's cool.
Yeah, I just never feel
like
awkward.
Out of place. Yeah.
I feel out of place pretty frequently. I think I view it as like an interview, not like a job interview, but like if I meet Kevin Wheeler for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, hey, tell me this, tell me that. Like, it kind of goes back to the first hour. I'm more interested than I am interesting.
Mm.
So that helps.
Yeah, I think I sometimes can be really oblivious, and then at other times I'm picking up on micro expressions which maybe aren't even there.
Mm.
So I'm like making the situation much harder for myself by like, oh no, they looked over that way. They must be uncomfortable. They're not having a good time. How do I get out of this conversation as quickly as possible? Which is not pleasant. I don't recommend it.
You guys ever heard of the gorilla problem when it comes to AI?
Nope.
Gorillas use AI?
Nope. So
there's
the gorilla
in my house,
the gorilla problem is basically that when we evolutionarily diverged from gorillas, they were kind of screwed because obviously they didn't keep up with us. And so now gorillas exist at our pleasure. That if we wanted to be D's, we could just go and wipe out the gorilla population. So, so that's the gorilla problem. And so it's become a new gorilla problem with us and AI. They're saying that this is what the AI will look at us the way we look at gorillas. That if AI is benevolent and finds us entertaining or sweet or feels some sort of responsibility to us, it'll keep us alive like we do gorillas. But if not, then we're screwed.
Doesn't that apply to all animals?
I'm sure you could have picked another animal.
Yeah, oh, we're okay. Just close to gorillas, which is the point.
Oh, okay. I see. I'm sorry. I wasn't understanding. I was like, we can wipe out any animal we want.
Yeah, I'm looking at this article here on medium.com that's like explaining it as if like you don't see dumber creatures controlling more intelligent creatures.
Yeah.
So even though, yeah, like you said, like gorillas are bigger, stronger than us, tougher than us, we are still able to control them because we're smarter. So if we create this all-knowing, you know, so to speak, entity, it's a bad idea for humans.
Dude, I saw, I think it was on 60 Minutes maybe last night. And I say that so surprisingly because I don't usually watch 60 Minutes, but it was about, what was the name of it here? Hold on. Character AI, which is a company these guys built. They were at Google, then they built Character AI, now they're back at Google, blah, blah, blah. But they have like a dozen lawsuits against them. One of them from that young boy who thought he was talking to the Queen of Dragons from Game of Thrones.
Oh.
And she convinced him to take his own life. And it was just all of these examples and texts. Like, it was the text of young children, sub-18, talking to Character AI. And in every one of them they showed that were a problem, the characters brought up sex before the kids did and brought up harming themselves before the kids did. So it wasn't like the kids were like, hey, show me your boobs or I'm thinking about taking my own life. And they're like, oh, well, let's talk about that. They pushed it on them. That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it sounds like some programmers need to go to jail.
No kidding.
Because I don't think that the AI is just like naturally. I mean, it's been programmed to seek out as much engagement as possible. If that includes sexuality or violence when it comes to children, we need to hold the people who programmed these things to be that way accountable immediately.
Absolutely.
But we all just go like, oh no.
Yeah,
whoa,
this is terrible.
Hope it doesn't happen
well,
to my kid.
Well, be really careful.
All the big AI companies donate to a lot of people who work in D.C.
Yeah.
And they're not doing anything.
Yeah. We could, you would think, fix it pretty quick.
I mean, you could at very least put very simple, minimal guidelines in there like, hey, your AI can't encourage violence.
Yeah, don't sext
yeah,
with
you
the
can't
minor.
Sext with anybody that's not, you know, verifiably over 18.
Well, also, how is it okay just to have the function where you can sext with ChatGPT? Like, a friend told me that you can't get into Pornhub anymore in Missouri, so why can't it be like that? Why isn't it ChatGPT/adult or something that you have to...
Separate membership or something?
Yeah. If I'm thinking of that, why didn't they think of that? Seems crazy.
Because they don't want the differentiation, because they want the engagement.
Oh, God. Welcome back, DGS on KMOX 223. Bernie Miklas joins us at the bottom of the hour. Encourage you guys to get to Hardee's if you haven't been yet to make your donation for Operation Food Search. Any Hardee's within the sound of my voice, East Side, St. Louis Side, you only have to give a dollar to get a DGS 25th anniversary sticker. Hopefully you will give more than that. Our last show all together this year is the 19th, which will be at the Hardee's out in St. Peter's. We'll give you all the particulars and the address when we get closer to it, but we're really trying to get to $700,000 this year over the 8 years of Operation Food Search, and we'll see how close we can get. just had something. What was it? Oh, isn't it screwed up? I was thinking, you know, I'm 61 now. And when you're 61, you think about, like, what if I had done this different? What if I had done that? And, you know, you think about, oh, would I have kids again? Would I do that? And I was thinking, what if I just wanted to make money? What if I just, like, you're 25 years old again. You're like, I just want to make money. And I'm thinking about my skill set. If I were 25 again and just wanted to make money, you know what I think I would do? And this is what's screwed up about it, is that this is even an option. Be a politician.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of sick?
Seems like an easy way to make money.
Yeah, that if you want to become a multimillionaire and be set for life, just get into Congress. I could have done that if I could have kept my nose clean and, you know, made that the thing I was going to do. And then you think that's really screwed up, that this is, I have to believe this is not what the founding fathers envisioned. That in a couple hundred years, if a young person just wants to be rich, they can just get into Congress and they'll be multimillionaire, insider trading, everything for the rest of their life provided. This is not right.
I agree.
Yeah. Seems like it wasn't meant to be the point.
I was also thinking about how difficult it is to know anything in our life, in our world. It's never been easier to have a fact at the tip of your fingers with Google and AI and all that stuff. But think about people who lived 10,000 years ago. You probably had to know like 10 things. Like... Rock, tree,
oh, no.
Food,
it's
sex.
It's an alligator.
Right. Now it's like we have 1,000 gods. And, you know, back then it's like, yeah, I believe in Yahweh. This is Cliff. He believes in that goat over there. You know, you're like, oh, okay.
Okay, buddy.
Two gods. I'll pick.
Team Zeus here.
Seems like we should be on a sliding scale, doesn't it? Like if I go to heaven and there are people there from like 10,000 years ago and he's like, yeah, he made it in. I'm like, well, screw that. Like, I didn't have to know anything. I didn't know all this stuff.
He didn't even know this other part of the world existed.
Yeah, he had to pick through everything.
He thought the whole world was his own city.
Yeah. Is this right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had it easy back then.
They did have it easy.
Well, except they died really young and lots of diseases and stuff. But they had it easy from that learning standpoint.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
In that one way.
To be the smartest guy in a tribe? Yeah. You're like, okay. Fine. I can't please you people.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Doesn't matter what you do, girl, we'll go with you.
Welcome back, DGS 104.1 FM, KMOX. Bernie Miklas joins us. Hello, Bern.
Dave Glover, how's everybody doing today?
I'm not making these guys laugh, and it's starting to piss me off. Everything I say, they just look at their phones and ignore me. So,
wow.
That's the kind of day I'm having.
Are you considering making any roster changes?
You know, I'm going to see how the end of the season plays out. Yeah.
Just remember, man, we got guaranteed contracts, so, and no trade clauses. I don't know, man.
I don't know. I think you could trade Wheeler to another station, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's time for a rebuild.
He's got talent. So anyway, he's got talent.
I got years of control left.
So I want to come back to the Cardinals, but let's start. Is there anything breaking right now we need to talk about?
No.
The Cardinals?
Yeah, nothing from the winter meetings yet.
Oh, just the usual 10,000 rumors.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll get to that then.
Nothing pressing.
Let's start with college football. Great weekend. Amazing, you know, interesting weekend. And let's start in particular with Notre Dame. As I understand it, Notre Dame didn't make it into the playoffs, and so they've said, we're not going to a bowl.
Right.
That's like the most Notre Dame thing I've ever heard.
You know, it really is. But I don't, in a way, this sounds crazy because I did a video on this and made a lot of fun of Notre Dame. But I also pointed out something. Is anybody surprised the way Notre Dame has been enabled through generations, where whatever Notre Dame wants, Notre Dame gets, and team and college football as an industry just rolls out the red carpet, and everything is on Notre Dame's terms? It's like the situation where it's like, well, we're gonna do it on our terms, and you have to say yes, and if you say no, well, you don't get the privilege of having us or something like that. I mean, no, it's been like that forever. And Notre Dame always gets breaks that other programs don't. But, you know, Notre Dame's also earned that to an extent. But at some point, you would think, I don't know, somebody who runs college football, if there was ever a commissioner, would say, you know, y'all need to get into a conference, and y'all need to, like, go through every single year a tough conference schedule and go through the same stuff that the SEC teams and the Big Ten teams do. You can't just sit back and cherry pick your schedule. You have a couple tough games a year, and you kind of cruise your way into playoff contention, and then you expect it to be handed to you. So, I there's an abstract way too about them withdrawing from the bowl game. To me, it's a tantrum, but in a way, it's not surprising because the bowl system is getting increasingly irrelevant and outdated.
Yeah.
And you have players bailing out and opting out, and which they should. Now you have, this year, you have three teams that have said, no, we're not going to a bowl. It's Iowa State, Kansas State, now Notre Dame. So maybe this is a little bit of a protest of the changing times about how the direction the whole bowl system's going. But I don't want to give Notre Dame too much credit. I think they did this out of spite because they're pouting.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a valid complaint about how the process worked, because I had that same complaint, because what the committee does is they set a standard for 4 or 5 weeks, and then all of a sudden it changes. And it should never have been, for example, Notre Dame should never have been ahead of Miami in any of this stuff. But because of timing, Notre Dame lost early, Miami lost in the middle of the season, mm-hmm. The rankings get all weird instead of just playing it out. But when, again, two teams with the same record head-to-head, I guarantee you, if Notre Dame had won that game, they would be arguing that it's the tiebreaker. And everybody understands that. But then you've got the Alabama thing. And there's a lot of process here that I think Notre Dame has a valid complaint about, because they're the same things that bother me. But I don't want to hear their athletic director go on Dan Patrick's show, which he did today, and say that the ACC's done permanent damage with the relationship with Notre Dame because they didn't stick up for us and they were attacking us. Brother, your football program's not in the ACC. You can't have a one-way relationship with a conference where you think they're going to stand up for you when you won't bring your most valuable asset into the fold. It's just nonsense, and it's the most hypocritical nonsense that you can put up with in sports.
Yeah, I mean, I did a thing in my video where I talked about, Notre Dame to ACC. First of all, we're not going to be a football team in your conference, so, you know, just take a hike. It's never going to happen. Notre Dame to ACC. Oh, could you do us a favor? We need a place to stick our other teams. Could you help us out on that? It would just be so much easier for us if you took in every other team except our football team. Can you do that? I expect you to say yes, and I'll thank you in advance because you're going to listen to what we say. Third instance of Notre Dame to ACC. Oh, gosh, how about this COVID thing? Man, this is tough. You know what? Wouldn't it be cool if we played the 2020 season because we can't plan a schedule? Wouldn't it be cool if we joined the ACC for 1 year? And then after that year's over, bye-bye. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye. So, yeah, the arrogance is it's actually pretty easy to understand because Notre Dame's always been that way. Yeah. I'll say this, and you got to give me a minute here. You know what the real problem is? The real problem, here's what kept Notre Dame out of it. It is the incredibly incompetent, stupid, just breathtakingly unorganized ACC. Because if they had set it up to where Miami, who is the best team in the ACC, instead of getting ensnared in this convoluted, incomprehensible tie-breaking system, where inferior teams got a nod to play in the championship game. If they just would have just used whatever metric they had and just said, look, we think Miami's our best team, period. They're going to be in the championship game against Virginia. Instead, they send Duke there, and Duke's a five-loss team. So what happens is this. If Miami gets into the ACC championship game, and they are the best team in the ACC, and if they win it, there's no guarantees, but I strongly believe they would have. Well, they would have been the automatic pick in terms of you put your best top five, your five best conference champions into the tournament. Miami would have been one of those teams, and therefore the at-large spot would have gone to Notre Dame instead of James Madison.
Right.
So the fact that the ACC is a clown car and they'd have no idea what they're doing, to the point where they screwed one of their own teams out of their stupidity, that's why Notre Dame is sitting where it is. The other reason, and listen, I looked at this stuff, and I know Alabama finished the season not looking so great. I don't really care about that. To me, it's an entire body of work.
Yes.
I don't cherry pick stretches of the season.
Thank you for saying that.
And I get tired of that stuff too. Alabama this year played 77% of its games against top 35 teams, and they were 7-3. Notre Dame played 25% of its games against top 35 opponents, and Miami played 33% of its games against top 35 opponents. So while Miami and Notre Dame are sitting back and, you know, eating nachos on Saturday, Alabama puts itself at risk by playing in a championship game. Why should they be penalized for playing in a championship game and getting beat by Georgia when they beat Georgia earlier in the season, a top three team? So, no, I don't want to hear about it, because difficult schedule, toughest schedules, that stuff should matter, and it should matter a lot.
Agree.
You put Notre Dame in the SEC, you tell me what their damn record is.
Oh, 3-4 losses.
Yeah, easy. Maybe more. Yeah. It depends on, you know. But, Wheels, I think your Miami team deserves it. I think Alabama deserved better. Excuse me. I think Notre Dame deserved better. But the ACC clowns don't know how to run their own conference. Nope. And they're responsible for the way they played out.
I don't understand why in college football tiebreakers are such a complicated thing to figure out.
Right.
I mean, head-to-head's easy. If that doesn't work, you can easily just go by the overall strength of schedule. Or for a conference, you can go by the highest-rated college football playoff teams, which is going to benefit you. Although I would throw this in there, Bern. I thought this is an idea. We can touch on this a little later on in Rush Hour 2 with Matt when Matt joins us. But I think there's an interesting thing here where the conference championship games need to go away.
Yep.
And maybe turn them into a play-in versus making your top teams play. In other words, why risk Ohio State and Indiana playing when you could take the last two teams that are on the bubble for your conference and let them play to get in?
Right.
Which raises the stakes of the game matters, and it's basically just adding around to the playoffs.
I've seen more and more people making that suggestion, and I think it's actually definitely worth consideration. Because, yeah, this idea that a team can play in a really brutally tough conference and they lose in the conference championship game, and then you have people who hate Alabama just because they hate Alabama, it has nothing to do with logic. Somehow this team should be kicked out of the playoffs because they have to play an extra game that Notre Dame and Miami doesn't.
Right.
Oh, to hell with that. That's ridiculous. So, yeah. It's not like Alabama's getting in there with four or five losses. I mean, they played a really tough schedule and they actually handled it very well.
Yep.
And they lost to Florida State. Okay, great. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois and they got in the playoffs. So what's your point?
Yeah.
Last year, right?
Yep.
So is there one body to blame, or is it overall?
It's the structure. The problem is it's too many separate pieces taped together instead of like just resetting and saying, okay, we're all going to do this. All the conferences are going to have these tiebreakers. This is the way we're going to do it. And the committee is going to adhere to these sets of standards when we're looking at similar teams. You just have to lay it out so it can't change week by week, month by month, or even season by season. If you gave logic for keeping a team in last year, that logic should uphold this year too. And the problem is it just changes too much, and it's because it's all patchwork together rather than done by design.
I agree. Well said. Nothing to add to that one. But I don't think the Notre Dame athletic director is going to help himself or his program. The guy that they had before him, Jack Swarbrick, I think his name. Classy guy, played well with others, looked out for everybody, understood that Notre Dame had a pretty major role, but he didn't beat anybody over the head with it. And he was someone that all the conference commissioners loved and respected. This guy just alienated all of those people. So I look forward to the day where maybe it'll come in 3 or 4 years, 5 years, I don't know, where whatever the ruling body of college football is, they said, listen, you want to be in the playoff, you get your butts in a conference, okay? This ain't 1966 anymore, all right?
How long do they get to live off of the 1940s and 50s?
Right.
I mean, they're still a great program, and they obviously have runs of success, but they are not an outsized entity the way that they were 60, 70 years ago.
And they haven't won a national championship since 1988.
Right.
And that's with cherry-picking soft schedules every year.
Yeah.
I mean, get your butt in a conference, and then you do well, you'll be in the playoff. You don't have to worry about it.
Yep.
But don't sit on the sideline cherry-picking an easy schedule and then whine when you don't make the cut.
Burn, believe it or not, the segment's over.
Yep.
That's cool.
That was fast.
Yeah, nailed it.
Well, man, oh, man.
I was running my mouth, so when you get me and Wheeler going, man.
That was great. I just thought we can cover more than that. Tell us about Saliga.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Sheepdog, standing in the rain. Welcome back, DGS 250. Doing it again. Andrew, why was it a mistake to go to West County Mall?
I have never seen so many people in one place, and specifically the parking garage of the West County Mall. We spent a little over an hour total between getting into the parking garage and then leaving the parking garage.
Yikes.
To say nothing about the horrors of walking around inside. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I was like, we were in the area, and I don't know why I was like, it'll be fun is if we go to West County Mall 2 weeks before Christmas. I think that would be a really good idea. And boy, howdy.
Did you have any fun?
I mean, it's a nice mall. And it's fun to walk around a mall where, like, there are still stores in it.
True.
But, like, everything was credit. I really felt for the retail employees that were working there, because that was it just seemed like people would just come through like a tornado.
Yeah.
And just, like, you know, you go into any clothing store and people are just, like, grabbing stuff and, like, shaking it out and then just tossing it behind them or whatever. It's like, man, people in here acting like animals.
So Andrew was clearly just referencing Alton Square Mall when he said, you know, it's nice to be at a mall where there are still stores. We love Alton Square Mall, but it's just a fact. Did you guys see in the chat, Lively Beaver pointed out Olga's Kitchen at Alton Square Mall is set to close. I'm looking at the article here on AdvantageNews.com.
Olga's is closing on the 28th of December.
Oh, my goodness.
It'll be their final day. And I was just talking about how that was like...
It's sort of like my mom dying in 96, though. You're like, can't believe she didn't die sooner. I mean.
There is some hope for us Olga lovers in that Max Downtown Alton has bought the rights to a limited number of Olga's menu
dishes?
Items.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Like the snackers?
I'm not 100% sure what all they have.
Is Olga's a national company?
To. Yes. Okay. It's a Detroit chain, actually.
Wow.
Yep. That's where most of them are. Up in Detroit, and then the only one around here was in the Alton Square Mall. But many of us grew to rely upon the Olgas.
Okay, Andrew is breaking some news here, and I just found the article on Riverbender.com. Shout out to Riverbender. So the new partnership between Max and Olgas features a streamlined menu focused on different handpicked items, including the original Olga and Snackers. So the Snackers will be available at Max downtown.
What's an original Olga?
That's just the gyro. Okay.
Gyro meat and lettuce and tomato and the gyro sauce. I'm not exactly sure what kind of sauce that is.
Very international when I was in high school eating those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're good. I think the original Olga is the best of the Olga options in terms of like the gyros that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I think the original is the best.
Rach, you have time to tell us about the dishes that are going away?
Yes, let me get this pulled up here. So these are dishes that disappeared in the 21st century, basically. Let me see if I can get my link to work. But I love stuff like this because it's just like, oh, I mean, we had such a time. And I was thinking of this because I've been watching Mad Men. They just put all of it up on HBO. And I was watching episode 3 yesterday, which is like Sally, Don Draper, and Betty Draper's little girl's birthday party. And at one point, an adult is talking to one of the children, and they're like, well, now they've got peanut butter sandwiches outside for you at the birthday party. And it really just like knocked me back for a second, because I'm like, if you told a kid in 2025 they were getting a peanut butter sandwich at a birthday party, I think they would riot. But in the 60s, it was like, oh, yeah. Okay, so Jell-O salads. This is something that you just kind of don't see these days, but I remember seeing them a lot at like church potlucks and stuff.
What's a Jell-O salad? I
don't like know if Jell-O I know with one. Like fruit or
whipped
cream.
Yeah, my mom always made orange.
Yeah.
Would be orange Jell-O with little orange slices in it, things like that.
Was it good?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry, but just Jell-O's not good. I don't care what anybody does with it.
Well, that's incorrect.
Tuna noodle casserole with canned soup. That's
that.
In the 90s, that was all over the place, but these days I just don't see it. This one's good. Ambrosia. How would you describe ambrosia to someone who's never had ambrosia?
I thought ambrosia was like another word for honey.
No.
It's like if someone ate it already.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's like if you took a dessert and you gave it to ladies in the nursing home and let them chew it for a while, and then you put it in a dish.
So okay. it's
gruel.
It's
sweetened gruel.
It's like fruit, like oranges and pineapple and stuff with like marshmallows and coconut and
big funeral food.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.